Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Food Network Obsessed. This is a podcast where we dish on all things Food Network with your favorite Food Network stars. I'm your host, Jamie Sire, and today we have an executive pastry chef on the show to talk about innovation in the dessert world, her famous Fabergé egg creation, and what it's like to judge creepy culinary creations. She is an internationally acclaimed pastry chef, named a woman to watch by LA Confidential magazine, and a judge on Halloween Baking Championship. It's Stephanie Boswell. Stephanie, welcome to the podcast. I'm so excited to dive in about everything with your life because I feel like we have a lot to cover. Of course, Food Network fans have been watching you as a judge on Halloween Baking Championship, which we will get to. But let's start with a fun fact. Do you really have a Michelin star tattoo?
I have two of them.
You have two?
I have two of them. Yeah. On either hand. I got these after working in Chicago because while in Chicago, I worked for two restaurants that achieved a Michelin star each. And it was one of the most gratifying, challenging experiences. And I wanted to remember it for the rest of my life. And I wanted to put it on my hands because, you know, I work with my hands every day. And there's something to the idea of always looking down and looking at what your goals are and keeping that in sight. So I thought, if I'm always looking at my hands and I'm always sort of working with them, having that as being a constant goal and a constant mark of what's possible with hard work and a good attitude and pushing through. So I put them there permanently because most of my tattoos are very kind of scrapbooky in a way.
Okay.
You know, like they're not trendy. They're not nothing tribal, nothing like that. It's not based on what's the cool tattoo of the moment. It's all moments in my life that have been impactful for me or things I wanted to remember and hold dear. So, you know, I get a lot of tattoos on vacations or places I've lived or, you know, moments in my life that I wanted to remember. So my body has sort of become this amalgamation of all these different pieces of art and things that I like.
That is so cool. Do you have other ones that are related to, you know, cooking and pastry and anything like that?
I do. One of the most notable ones that I get asked about a lot is on my forearm. It's the chemical composition for sugar because, you know, when I was in college, initially I studied everything. I was one of those kids that was like, you know, changing majors as often as I changed socks. When I finally, you know, left college and just sort of decided I wanted to cook for a living, I wanted to take this kind of leap of faith. And my brother, actually, who's, you know, one of my best friends in the entire world, I told him about it. And he said, you know, it's better to be at the bottom of a ladder you want to climb than halfway up one you don't. And so I enrolled in culinary school and and then started working in kitchens and things like that simultaneously. And when I realized, like, this is what, solidly, concretely realized this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, I got the tattoo on my arm, on my forearm specifically, because at that point in time, cooking wasn't really fashionable. You know, it's sort of cool now to be a chef, right? Mm-hmm. But at that point, it was very much considered tradecraft. So my family, my mom specifically, was sort of appalled that I wanted to cook for a living. You know, she wanted me to be president of the United States at some point. So to her, telling her I wanted to cook for a living was just insane. But I knew that if I put this tattoo on my forearm, you know, I couldn't get a job at a bank. I couldn't get, you know, at that point in time, you couldn't have a square sort of like 9-to-5 job if you had visible tattoos. And so it was sort of like branding myself of, this is what I want to do. I'm making the commitment. I can't work any other job.
There's no turning back.
There's no turning back. Even if I wanted to, I couldn't, because now I've got this on my arm and I love it. And it's gotten a lot of attention. And it's funny to see, because every now and again, I'll meet somebody that's like studied, you know, organic chemistry or something like that in college. And they just look at me and go, ah, sugar. That's cool. Why do you have that? It's like they know nothing about me, but they know the tattoo.
Yeah, it's a good conversation starter at the very least. Let's start it, you know, in Chicago, that time in your life. As you mentioned, you got the two Michelin star tattoos because you were at two restaurants that received them, True and Naha. What do you remember about those days kind of starting out in your career?
They were hard. It was my first sort of foray into fine dining. So it was challenging, you know, and fortunately I was young. I was, you know, in my early 20s. And so I had good knees and good hips, you know, and I could just run and bust through walls. And at that point in time, I sort of, you know, realized like my value comes from the fact that I am so tenacious and so stubborn, and I will put a shoulder through a wall if I have to get the job done. Because at that point in time, when you're just starting out, like, you kind of suck, you know, like most people, like there's no, like, I don't know any real like prodigies of the craft. Like, you know, there's people that can be born with an incredible palate and an incredible ability to identify color and balance and things like that. But knowing how to work in a kitchen is a very different animal, and the sort of logistics of that. The trick to it that I found early on was just work really, really hard. Just outwork everybody that you possibly can, because that's where your value lies, and learn as much as you can. You know, I was working at True. I mean, some days were like 21 hour days. And then I moved on to Naha. I was so fortunate. I worked for one of the greatest pastry chefs in the country, Craig Harshevsky. And he taught me the value of, you know, you can be so talented. You can be a certifiable badass in the industry, and you don't need to be a jerk to do it. You know, you don't need to shout. You don't need to throw things. You don't need to denigrate anybody. He was one of the most patient, intelligent, thoughtful chefs I've ever had in my life. And I, you know, from him, I got that sort of input of, oh, that's what I want to be when I grow up. Because he was just so gracious and so generous in all of his education for me, both, you know, emotionally and obviously in practical application. 15 years later, I'll still call him chef. Yeah. Like he's never,
that will never change.
That will never change. I will never call him by his first name.
What do you miss most about Chicago?
Oh, everything. I adore Chicago. Chicago is one of my favorite cities in the entire world. The people are amazing. The city is amazing. And growing up in California, I didn't know how much I needed seasons until I got there, because, you know, you don't realize, like, when you're a kid and you're watching the Christmas Story and you're watching all of these movies and stuff, and you see this snow and things like that, and all the things that sort of represent the holidays, and you look outside and it's palm trees in 85. You know, you don't realize how, like, it feels a little monotonous and robbing of, like, all of these beautiful holiday experiences that you've been told you're supposed to have. So the first time I saw snowfall in Chicago, I cried. I absolutely just broke down crying, because it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen in my life. You get, you know, real, real weathered during winter. And as soon as the weather hits like 55, it's like, oh, shorts and flip-flops. Oh my God, this is the greatest weather I've ever experienced. I love that Chicago, all of its seasons are the most of that season you will ever experience in your life. Winter is the most winter you've ever known. Summer is it's like 90 degrees and 90% humidity. And then fall is like everything sort of smells like chimney and like leaves. And it's just incredible. And it's crisp and everybody's cheeks are a little bit flush. And spring, literally, you go out in spring. And for some reason, after all of the winter that you've been through, you're rewarded with tulips just blossoming. Tulips and daffodils blossoming all over the city. It's incredible. It's an incredible place. I haven't even talked about the food.
What are some of your go-to spots in Chicago? I know our listeners always love hearing chefs' favorite restaurants.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been there in so many years, unfortunately, that I feel like any place I named would be like, oh, that doesn't make sense anymore. When I was there, obviously, you know, there's always Alinea. Alinea was the reason I moved to Chicago, because at the time I was still living in Orange County and working at a country club and kind of, you know, scooping cookies and making brownies and stuff like that. And I longed for more. And I went into an establishment that I think is few and far between now. I think they're called bookstores.
What is that?
What are a bookstore? I, of course, went to the cooking section, and the food that I was seeing, I'd never known possible. It was over the top, too much, incredible. And I thought, wherever this is happening, I want to be. So I flipped to the front of the book, saw that Alinea was located in Chicago, and the next week I had a plane ticket. And I moved there. I didn't have a job. I didn't have friends. I didn't have family. I didn't have connections. I just knew that I wanted to be there. That kind of started the whole fine dining, beautiful career I've had. And again, you know, it's all based on leaps of faith.
Yeah. Well, you took another leap of faith after Chicago and headed to Vegas, which we obviously have to talk about. I would imagine a city like that where everything is over the top, so much opulence. It's hard to make your mark there, but you certainly did that. How would you describe that chapter of your career in Vegas?
Amazing. I left Chicago because I felt like my career was getting very pinpointed into fine dining. And I had to start thinking about, like, what was the overall game plan? What was the retirement plan, you know? And generally speaking, for chefs, a lot of times that involves getting some kind of hotel experience. The best hotels in the country are in Vegas. Moved to Vegas, worked for the brilliant Sean McClain. And what I learned in Vegas was, you know, like in Chicago, it was one of those things of like, guys, we're going to have a real crazy night. There's like 75 covers. Buckle down. Button it up. It's going to get wild. And in Vegas, that number shoots to like 600. It was an incredible experience because coming from Chicago and like all of the fine dining experience I had from there, a lot of it didn't translate. You know, a lot of it, because in Vegas, you need to be able to make someone happy that's coming in from Boise. And you need to make someone happy that's coming in from Hong Kong. You need to learn a style that is inventive and interesting and makes people want to come back for more, but also is incredibly familiar for humans in general, you know, not based on regionality in any way, shape, or form.
We have next stop on your culinary adventure was Beverly Hills, where you were the executive pastry chef at the Peninsula. During that time, you're named one of the best up-and-coming female chefs by CBS LA. So you're back in your hometown and you're getting that kind of recognition locally. What was that like?
Surreal. You know, when you're back of house, you sort of become accustomed to the fact that you're not, you know, you're not flashy, you're not front of house, you're not going to be recognized, and that's okay. And you accept that very early on, as like, you don't do it for the accolades, you don't do it for the ego strokes, you know. Being called out by name as best up and coming and like, you know, woman to watch and all this stuff. It was really weird. it was really cool and really strange. I mean, obviously, like, super flattering. And yeah, I couldn't quite wrap my head around how it happened, because I was, you know, just sort of plugging away, doing my job every day, doing what I liked, which is, I think, even more of a statement of how awesome it was, because I really wasn't trying for anything. You know, I was just trying to do what I thought was cool.
Well, I mean, one of the very cool things that you did was an award-winning dessert creation experience, I guess you could say. The Fabergé egg, for anyone that doesn't know, can you kind of describe this dessert experience and how that brainchild came to be in your mind?
So it came to me right after I left Vegas, which is probably why it was so over the top, you know, because I still had the glitz rattling through my head. And I wanted to create a piece of art that involved the guest, you know, that was interactive. And as a child growing up, I was the youngest child. I was the only female. So my education and my betterment was my mother's only concern. So literally every weekend was a museum, an arboretum, you know, a show, you know, like a musical, a play, something like that. But mostly museums. I heard the words, "Don't touch that," a lot growing up. So I wanted to sort of create this piece of art that was breaking a barrier of like fine art and don't touch that, right? I wanted to create something incredibly beautiful, incredibly bespoke, that was intentionally given to you to smash. Take a hammer and smash it, destroy it, because there's something sort of beautifully cathartic about destroying something beautiful, you know? And in that ended up becoming the art in and of itself. It sort of became performance art in a way. And yeah, because at that point in time, everyone was doing, you know, like chocolate spheres that you melt with something hot going over. And I thought that's sort of passive. That's not really involving yourself in the process of the art. And I thought smashing it, that's just too fun. And I involved all of my cooks with it, because as a chef, I believed it was my responsibility to train my cooks how to be chefs. You know, it's not enough to just give them recipes and say, do this over and over and over again because I said so. It's my job to teach them how to move forward in life and become, you know, chefs themselves. And so each and every single one of my cooks would, you know, be given their own eggs every day to design in any way they thought that they liked, you know, like any color scheme, any, you know, any pattern they wanted. So every single one was different and unique. And I loved that about it. And it sort of flies in the face of everything that is pastry, because, you know, everyone's always saying like, well, consistency, it's all about consistency. And for me, it's like, yeah, consistency is incredible. And it's absolutely, it's fundamental. But at the same time, art isn't. And a person's artistic eye certainly isn't. Everyone gets their own reality. And as a result, everyone is going to paint a little different and think a little different. And that should be sacred too.
How long did it take to paint each one?
Well, some of them, like the more sort of elaborate ones, like there's one on I think my Instagram that's, you know, it's all got little flowers on it and stuff like that. And that one probably took 2 hours, you know, and it's fun because then it's like, break it, smash it, you know,
eat it.
Yeah. There's something about like, because all chefs do art that's meant to be destroyed, right? We just don't say it. There's something very beautifully literal about it that I like.
And what was inside when you smashed it open?
So that changed. That changed okay. From season to season. So it could be anything from, you know, kind of like a pumpkin pie to Black Forest to, it was always something, rather, I tried to make it always something very relatable, very, very human, right? So these flavors that have been around and are classics, and the reason they're classics is because they're good. Because in a lot of ways, you know, what I learned in Vegas was this template, if you will, of I want to make things 80% classic and representational and everyone will find it delicious. And 20% is that little adventure, that little come with me, let me try and show you something a little bit new. Because people are a lot more likely to go along with you on that let's explore something new if you give them, if you go most of the way for them, right? I felt like the 20% in the Fabergé egg was smashing it. So I was destroying it. The 80% was the very familiar, very classic filling. So it was, I mean, it was layer cakes. It was death by chocolate. It was all kinds of stuff. It was basically a piñata.
I love that. You mentioned kind of your experiences growing up, you know, going to museums, don't touch that, you know, a lot of that. But what about your food experiences growing up? What was that like as a kid?
So when I was a kid, I went to the doctor, and this was, you know, the 80s. And the doctor took my blood and said, well, she's got really high cholesterol. She's got strangely high cholesterol for a child. So, you know, told my mom, you need to watch out on that. So from that point on, I was not allowed to have sugar. I was not allowed to have fat. I was not allowed to do anything other than run cross country most days. Then as a result, Thanksgiving is like my favorite holiday, right? Because, you know, it was the only time of year I got to have stuffing and mashed potatoes and like, and dessert and all of these things. You know, I distinctly remember turkey burgers that looked like hockey pucks. I still to this day can't eat ground turkey because it's just, it like makes my eye twitch thinking about the hockey pucks when I was a kid. I had basically like the super macrobiotic diet as a kid. Plot twist. Now I'm a pastry chef.
I mean, was that similar to, you know, the egg idea in that all of your life you're not allowed to have sweets and you're finally an adult and you're like, I'm going to just make sweets all the time.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, there is definitely a level to me working out my own therapy via my via pastry. Yeah, completely. Yeah, I'm working through some stuff. That's all it is.
What about Halloween when you were a kid? Were you allowed to have any of that candy or was that off limits as well?
I don't know if this still happens, but when I was a kid, there was an urban legend of like there's razor blades in the candied apples.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of that.
Yeah.
You know, like food was poison. You know, there's going to be like rat poison on stuff. And like, you know, all of these like horror stories that like parents told each other, you know, at Little League. And it sort of disseminated through the kids. So I was allowed to have a little bit of it. But basically, as soon as I got home from trick or treating, it was confiscated and then doled out if I did something good. Halloween to me was like a very mixed bag of emotions because I loved the dressing up. The dressing up was more important to me than pretty much anything. I mean, there's a picture of me that I still have. I really wanted to be a butterfly that year. And my mom did not have a butterfly costume. But what she did have was a clown costume, like a clown pumpkin costume.
Basically the same thing.
Yeah. So she put me in that. And the entire night, I threw a temper tantrum from basically start to finish. So every picture of me from that night is my face just completely mid tantrum, like sobbing my eyes out. I mean, just massive cheeks, just completely distorted, tears everywhere, like smearing the pumpkin makeup, like hilarious. And of course, my brothers are both having a great time. So they've got their arms around me and hugging me as I'm sobbing in every photo.
Stephanie chats with us about the latest season of Halloween Baking Championship. That's coming up next.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I think it's a perfect segue to Halloween Baking Championship, which the finale airs this Monday. The show looks like a complete blast. I got to chat with Zach a few weeks ago. I mean, it seems like just being a judge on that show is pretty much a dream gig, especially Everything that we've just learned about you. I mean, did you ever imagine that would be like part of your job?
Absolutely not. That was like dream come true of impossible dreams. You know, doing Halloween Baking Championship is a gift. It is absolutely not work. It is the greatest. It's like second Christmas. It's absolutely my most favorite. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Like, it's so amazing. From the costumes to the incredible cakes that these bakers do, it's absolute perfection. I can't say enough about it. And then, of course, you've got Zach and you've got Carla. Carla, who is essentially human glitter. Like, she's sunshine, the nicest.
Yes. Glitter is a good, yes.
She's just the greatest person you've ever met in your entire life. So getting to work with her and Zach every day, and then adding to that, put on costumes and kind of feel yourself in this space is just amazing.
Who do you think takes the characters and the costumes like the most seriously on set?
That's this one right here.
Really?
Right here. I go a little Daniel Day-Lewis on it, I gotta be honest. So this last season, we were told it's all 80s, right? It's an 80s themed homage to the awesome, iconic 80s slashers. And so... And then that was true for our quote unquote normal dress as well. So I decide to go to every thrift store, vintage store in Los Angeles and in Central California to buy all 80s attire from the 80s. So every single piece I'm wearing is actually from the decade and represents like, and I wanted to really like kind of hone in on these different vibes from the 80s, you know? So there's like the Adam Ant and there's Dynasty and there's Pretty in Pink and there's all these different sort of, you know, ilks from within that singular decade that are so spectacular. And all of them are kind of over the top and feel a little costumey nowadays. But yeah, I went in.
I think that's incredible. You were the one going out, you know, sourcing your costumes. You didn't leave it up to the wardrobe department.
No. I love homework. I love it. I love it. Give me a task to do, especially a fun task. Like, hey, go find like basically everything that has shoulder pads in it.
Yes.
In the Los Angeles area.
The poofier, the better.
Yeah, the poofier, the better. I mean, it was... Next, okay, for the finale, I don't want to go telling tales out of school, but the outfit that I found for the finale is next level. I can't say too much because I want it to be a surprise, but Oh my God. It was the most expensive thing at any vintage store I've ever seen in my entire life. Let's just say it's purple. It's leather.
Ooh.
It's beaded and okay. embroidered.
That's a good tease, I would say. So everybody's going to have to tune in to see exactly what that looks like yeah. On screen. But I mean, obviously the costume, the hair and makeup are, like you said, next level. How long are you spending in the chair for this show when you're, you know, getting all decked out like that?
It depends. So for, you know, some of the more tame looks, which I'll say, let's just say like Carrie, you know, the sort of reference to, you know, Miss Spacek, that was probably an hour. That was pretty easy because most of that was just putting on a wig and then dousing me in blood. However, something like the clown costume, which is coming up, that took about 3 hours because that's a full prosthetic mask. That's a bald cap. That's then hair on top of the bald cap. I mean, it goes on. Last season, I was the Sasquatch supermodel, which was one of my favorite costumes of all time. Because again, I get too into character. I heard that I was going to be Sasquatch supermodel, and I immediately started kind of diving into like, okay, what does that mean? How am I going to play that? And I decided on it being, first and foremost, a supermodel who doesn't fully understand that they are a Sasquatch, you know? So like trying to plug their new like body spray available at any drugstore, kind of like not with it, just like fully committed to being a supermodel, and like the appearance of the Sasquatch was sort of secondary. That took about 4 hours to get into.
Wow.
And that was one of the hottest things I've ever worn in my life. It was about, I want to say it was like 3 wigs and 2 beards, head to toe fur, like a onesie jammy kind of situation. It was a lot.
Well, we should talk about the contestants as well. I mean, what impresses you the most about just what you're able to see them, you know, complete during this competition?
It is astounding to me. What a testament to the human spirit it is, because it is not easy, you know, and I get a lot of, you know, people asking me like, what's wrong with their time management? And it's like, this is the hardest situation I could ever imagine putting a person in and then saying, now make a beautiful cake, please. It is an uphill battle. And the fact that they are able to do these incredible works of art in that amount of time with cameras in their face, cords on the floor, it's a new kitchen that they don't have, you know, that muscle memory for yet. So it's just, it's sheer pushing through. It's incredible. I am always astounded at what they are able to come up with. It's earth shattering.
I'm always intrigued by, you know, how something can look so scary, but also delicious at the same time. Where do you draw the line when it comes to like the creepy culinary creations?
Because it's surrounded with the ultimate, the overall theme, right? The ultimate, like, it needs to be slashy, scary. There's a lot of leeway there, right? Mm-hmm. But for me, it's like the weird gummy textures that just I look at and I just can't. It grosses, it literally, it,
it's like
it
too
breaks,
real.
Yeah, it breaks the barrier of like, you know, suspension of disbelief, right? Like it looks so real that I am put off.
Well, we're so excited to see the finale. I know you're also a judge on the upcoming Buddy versus Duff holiday special.
Yes.
Can you give us a little teaser on that? What can we expect for that special?
Oh my God. Okay. What you can expect is nothing short of miraculous. I was picking my jaw up off the floor every single day. What these artists are capable of doing is it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. It is tantamount to witchcraft. I don't know at what point it's going to line up, but there are some cakes that they do that literally made me like want to cry. They were so beautiful and so intricate and so perfect. I mean, it's hard to believe that it's cake.
No, it's incredible to see what they can accomplish as well. It's been so much fun chatting with you about your accomplishments. We're going to wrap things up with a little rapid fire round, and then we have one final question for you. So, gummies or chocolate?
Chocolate.
Favorite late night snack?
Cold pizza and ranch.
Speaking of pizza, Chicago deep dish or New York style?
New York. Sorry, Chicago. Okay. It's not pizza, it's quiche.
Agreed. Or casserole or something. I don't know. How do you like your coffee or tea?
Black.
Tricks or treats?
Treats.
Favorite breakfast pastry?
Ham and cheese croissant.
Favorite scary movie?
How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
That's a favorite scary movie?
It's terrifying.
I love that movie. I mean, I will watch that whenever it is on.
Both of them gaslighting each other. Terrifying.
It's a psychological
real
thriller.
Life stuff right there. All right.
What do you listen to while baking?
Generally, Motown.
Okay.
Anything that I can wiggle to, I can dance to, has a good rhythm. I love Kanye West for cooking. Yeah. And I really, if I'm in like a certain mood, Rage Against the Machine.
Oh, okay.
That's the spectrum.
Runs the gamut there.
Yeah.
Easiest and hardest part of your job?
Editing, the creative process. When to stop, when to put your tools down and walk away.
So that's the hardest. What's the easiest?
The creative process.
Okay. Well, we have our final question for you. This is a question that we ask all of our guests on Food Network Obsessed at the very end. And as you might expect, every single answer is completely different based on the person that we are asking. So the question is, what would be on the menu for your perfect, ideal food day? So we want to know what you're eating for breakfast, lunch, dinner, of course, dessert, any snacks you want to mix in. You don't have to. There are basically no rules. You can travel wherever, time travel. Spend however much money. Anyone can cook it for you. So it is your day and the floor is yours.
Breakfast, leftover Chinese food from the night before with a fried egg prepared by Chrissy Teigen.
Okay.
Lunch, I love hiking. Hiking is one of my favorite things to do. I've climbed Mount Whitney now a few times and mm-hmm. I'm wanting to climb Kilimanjaro. So I'm going to say,
wow,
cold fried chicken.
Okay.
On top of Kilimanjaro.
Wow.
Goals. I'm setting goals right now.
That's a pretty epic, picture that you just painted.
It's a little bit Ina Garten, of like cold fried chicken is one of the best things. It's that little bit of comfort food with a little bit of like life goals. Dinner. Anything from anywhere in Tokyo. I've eaten some of the most astounding food, and I'm not being hyperbolic, in 7-Eleven in Tokyo.
Yes.
It's wild. Like anywhere, I've eaten amazing foods underneath train tracks in Tokyo. So the basement of malls, subways. I've eaten the most incredible meals of my entire life in Tokyo. So I would say anything from anywhere the entire city. And I'll probably be fine.
Nothing's off limits. What are you having for dessert?
Street crepes in Bangkok. 25 cents.
What's in them?
What do you want to be in?
What do you want to be in them?
It's Bangkok, man. Nothing is off the menu. You know what I mean? You can. Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, the street food in Bangkok is like just incredible. You can go days, weeks, months without ever sitting in a restaurant. It's one of the greatest food cities in the world.
Well, I could keep talking to you forever about food and travel.
Let's do that.
Let's have a part two. We'll just book it now.
Why can't we just talk forever? What's wrong with that? I'm good with it.
Might lose a few people, but we'd have a great time. We'll talk to the powers that be, but for now, we will say farewell and thank you again so much for sharing all your stories.
This was so great. Next time, ASMR. Yes. I'll just start crinkling things. Sipping
Love
coffee.
It. Well, I have to say, being a pastry chef sounds like a pretty sweet life. A huge thanks to Stephanie for joining us. You can catch her on the season finale of Halloween Baking Championship this Monday, October 25th at 9/8 Central on Food Network and streaming on Discovery Plus. Thanks so much for listening, and make sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a thing. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to rate and review. We love it when you do that. That's all for now. We'll catch you foodies next Friday.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.